Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good evening, folks. My name is Linda, and I am an alcoholic. And I am very grateful and humbled to be part of this wonderful conference, Sobriety Under the Sun, hey? When I think about how far I've come, and I'm sure everybody else in this room, to actually be at a resort and remember what you're doing, I have to tell you, it's a miracle in itself. So I have been I've been asked to share what it was like for me and what happened, obviously, and what it's like now. And I think that for me, it's really important to tell my story. I mean, I can't tell anybody else's story. And, you know, I've been at some amazing conferences and people have come up here and been so funny. And I was like, I wish I could be like that. But that's them. And I mean, I'm going to tell you a few things tonight that you might find hopefully a little bit funny, but I think the one thing I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I have to begin and then I have to continue to learn how to be myself. No other way, right? Got to keep it real. So I want to share a little bit, I don't want to take you into the trenches. I mean, this is a conference, and I don't want to traumatize people. So I will, you know, be mindful of that. But I think it's important for me to share a little bit about what it was like for me. And just in case there's somebody out there that has my story a little bit that can relate, I think it's really important. And when I was a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, I remember going to a conference and being so overwhelmed, hey? Being so overwhelmed. And, you know, just looking for something to learn how to stay sober for a day, right? So I grew up in a family where there was Catholic Irish family, and we had alcoholism at its finest, for sure. My father was a chronic late-stage drunk. And so when he was sober, he was a good man. He definitely was. But when he was drunk, he was not. And he would black out and he would abuse all of the children in my family. I'm the youngest of six, so there was myself and my sister and four brothers. And it was... I guess the word that I like to think about was it was like living in horror every day. And so I quickly figured out in that family that I didn't want to be there, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. So I didn't remember a whole lot because I was the youngest, but my siblings had shared with me as I came into recovery that lots of stuff happened that was probably a good thing I to this day don't remember. So I survived trauma. I survived physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, and later on in my life experienced financial abuse. And so anything different from where I came from was better than what I had. Anything. It didn't matter. And I remember the days when my father would be just even a little bit sober, and I'd be like, wow, he's so different. And then, of course, he would drink, and he would become a monster, you know, because he had the disease of alcoholism in his brain, right? In his brain. So I learned through my sobriety that as a result of doing the 12 steps a lot, that I learned to also find some good things about my dad, right? Like I learned that, like, my father was a musician. He was very talented. You know, he cared about his family. He would come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he would just not be able to do it for a while, and he would be one of those, you know, kind of chronic relapsers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he would still go back, right? Grab a meeting, grab a coffee, right? You know, and finally he did find his way into Alcoholics Anonymous, and he did die with 23 years of sobriety. So, and this was someone, in the rooms that he would come in, and people would just, they didn't want anything to do with him anymore, right? Because he was just such a chronic relapser. So he was a huge power of example for me, for sure, when I had gotten to these rooms. So in my family of origin, lots of things happened, which I won't get into, but I will tell you this, that when I left, I knew how to please you, right? I knew how to try to stay safe, and I did whatever that took. So I left home at 14 years of age, and I was in the music business right out of the gate. I'm a singer. That was my first career. And so I was on tour with a false ID, of course, right? How old are you? 18. No, I was 14. but anyway, so I was traveling and doing some different things, and, you know, quickly got into, getting into the drinking and other drugs, right? So my first experience of drinking, I blacked out. I was about 14 years old, maybe 14 and a half years old, and I had caught my father's disease, no doubt. So my first memory, which isn't great for a young person, hey, is drinking, blacking out, waking up in somebody's bed with bruises all over, and didn't remember what happened. So that was my first experience with drinking. My first thought about that was, I'm just like my dad, right? I don't want to be like my dad, but oh my gosh, I am like my dad. And I thought, this isn't fair. So, quickly living in denial, you know, which was important at that time, you know, continued to drink and got into some other drugs. And my suffering went from, you know, age 14 to 23. And I came in the rooms at 23 years of age. So I was young, but I was very old in my soul. And I had progressed very quickly with this disease, very, very quickly. So I came in and I was known as a late stage alcoholic at that age. And I could relate to, you know, some of the men and some of the women that were here that were twice my age at the time. And I could identify with who they were because I was in that particular stage. So I didn't, we think about step one and that complete powerlessness, hey? And, for me, I wanted to prove to myself that I was not an alcoholic. I don't know if anyone else can relate to that. So I would try different things, right? And, get up in the morning and, you know, it's going to be like this, right? Couldn't quite get that done. And for me, the real suffering was that every time I drank, I would black out. And so, I mean, and not just like black out in one town, I would... I would have that lovely opportunity of ending up in different towns. So I met some lovely ladies here from Anchorage. I said, where are you from? And they said, Anchorage. I said, okay. So here's a little Anchorage, quickly, little Anchorage story. So I was in Honolulu at the time. My sister lived over there with her husband, and so I'd spent some time over there, and, you know, I was drunk and doing China white heroin. And so blacked out, of course, always blacking out, right? And I come out of it, and I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. Yeah. So I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. I was in Honolulu, like, I don't know, the day before? What the hell happened, right? So I'm up in Anchorage, Alaska. I got a broken leg. I apparently had signed some contract up there to sing, and I was in the trenches. I was definitely in the trenches. And so I called my sister who lived in Honolulu, and I said, Carol, it's really dark here. And she's like, where are you? And I'm like, I think I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. She's like, what happened? I don't remember. You know, so of course, you know, the family illness, I'm telling her like it's not my fault. And, you know, I didn't mean to drink as much as I was, you know, drinking, and I blacked out again. And could she help me? Could she send me some money? Could she send me a ticket? And for the first time, she said, no. No, I will not. And I thought, so of course I tried the guilt trip. Well, you know, I'm going to die here. I'm not going to make it. I mean, I tried everything, right? And she's like, well, I hope you don't die, but this time it's no. It's no, right? And, you know, when I look back, when I first got sober, when I think about what that must have been like for her, you know, to have her baby sister up in Anchorage, Alaska with a broken leg and, you know, struggling in her, you know, active disease with alcoholism and drug dependency and, you know, and to, you know, probably think she might die, right? She might die, but it's time to say no. And so she hung up the phone and, you know, I found my, you know, so I mean, I was up there for, I don't know, I think the contract was 6 months to a year. Like, I don't really, I mean, I was mostly drunk the whole time, so I don't really remember much, but I do remember the suffering. I remember the suffering. And one of my defining moments, you know, we talk in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I know with my sponsor and sponsors I've had and old timers, you know, that I've trusted, and, you know, they've talked to me about, you know, what was your defining moment, or did you have some defining moments, you know, your bottom or... And one of my defining moments in Anchorage, Alaska, was when I was kind of walking by a store, and the sign said, no prostitutes allowed. And I thought, wow, because I felt like that, right? I was up there with nothing. I went from being an amazing, talented singer to working in clubs, dancing, hustling, doing everything I could to just sustain my addiction. And I know that I am not unique. I know that there are people here in this room this evening that can relate to that defining moment. I remember the shame I felt. And I thought, how can they put that sign in that window? And I felt the shame because I knew I was doing things that I really didn't want to do. I didn't want to do those things, but I didn't know what else to do because I had come from a family where there was trauma and abuse. Right? So that was one of my defining moments when we look at step one and, you know, writing out step one, you know, what happened, hey? And another one of my defining moments without getting into the trenches was, I mean, I come from the East, so I drank and used in Windsor, Ontario, and spent some time in Detroit. And I was just a little baby girl. I mean, I was young, I was afraid, and, you know, I always pretended on the outside that I wasn't, right? Because I was always loaded, so it didn't matter to me. So one of my other defining moments before I got sober was waking up in some house in Detroit with, you know, people all over the floor and guns and blood and, you know, just not knowing what happened, hey? Not knowing what happened. So when I got here and looked at that step one and started to write out, what did I do, hey? Like when I drank, what kind of person was I? You know, I had to get honest with my life. And not just the parts that I liked. So to this day, I don't forget those defining moments. You know, I remember what brought me through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was because when I drank, I blacked out. And when I blacked out, I put myself in danger every time as a female alcoholic, right? So, you know, through God's grace, I believe that somebody was there trying to help me, trying to protect me. And then I'd run out of booze or drugs, and where'd my friends go? You know, where did everybody go? And so another defining moment, right? Windsor, Ontario, and, you know, drunk and high and, you know, just suffering. And, you know, those so-called friends dumped me on the river, the riverbanks, left me there to die. I thought these are my friends, hey? So for me, sobriety is about honesty. You know, it's about I got to know my story, and my story can change as I continue to get better in my recovery. But I have to know my story. I have to get honest. And those steps are there, I believe, you know, to get honest about where I came from, you know, what happened and, you know, what it's like now. So I think you got the picture, suffering little street girl coming in, 23 years old, you know, 8 years of, you know, alcohol and hardcore drugs, lots of assaults, you know, lots of trouble, lots of really very painful experiences, and, you know, got taken advantage of a lot as a result of my active alcoholism, you know, which I believe today that when I look back at my story, when I first came in, I kind of thought, I know who I am. And then, of course, being here for a while, I learned that there were lots of things I did that I would never have done that sober. I would never have done those things sober, right? And I had to learn how to forgive myself. I had to really learn to forgive myself, which is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So I came in, and when I got here, I will be celebrating 37 years sober and clean, February the 16th next month. Thank you very much for sharing that with me. I say that not to be a little Miss Smarty Pants. I say it because I'm really proud of sobriety. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it when I was 30 days sober, and I'm proud of it now. And it matters to me. Sobriety matters, right? Sobriety matters, folks. I believe that. So when I got here, you know, those old timers, thank God for those old timers. They loved me and, you know, cared for me and kept an eye on me because I was so vulnerable when I got here. And, you know, so, you know, had some experiences with that and quickly learned how to, you know, kind of just make sure that I was hanging with people that could, you know, could kind of keep an eye on me. And I was also careful about what I shared in my story and where I shared that, right? Because if there are people who maybe didn't have respect for recovering street women, you know, that can be a problem, right? So I was taught here to do the steps every year, and that's, you know, old school. Don't have to, you know, do it my way. But I mean, I've been taught that I have to work on this sobriety every day of my life. And I have. For me, relapse is not an option. And the only reason why it's not an option for me is because I cannot guarantee the outcome. I can't. Because when I drink, I can't stop. Because I have my father's illness. I have the illness of alcoholism, and it lives in my heart and in my soul, but it lives in my brain. And I've learned that. I've learned that over the years. And when I think back about my own dad, I really understand that today. You know, I understand that it was his brain, right? That he was such a you know, a suffering man when he drank, no different than when I drank. I'd like to help others. I'd like to, you know, maybe, you know, give a little of something back and do those things. And so I said to my lovely sponsor at the time, I want to be an addictions counselor. And she said, you and everybody else. I thought, oh, great. I'm like, what do you mean? Well, yeah, you know, everybody comes in, they all want to be addictions counselors, Linda. So another defining moment, when I was on the street, my very last time that I was out there, I'll never forget it to this day. It was in Windsor, Ontario, and I was, you know, I was doing things. I was sick. I was maybe 110 pounds. I had walking pneumonia. I was dying. And I stood on the street and I said, listen, God, if you're there, if you're, I don't know, because I was raised Catholic, so I had some kind of background. I said, listen, you either take me now or you got to help me, right? Because I'm going to die. And something happened, and that higher power that I choose for me to call God, next thing you know, I'm locked up in a, back then, they locked you up at the mental health ward if you were a drunk and a heroin addict. I mean, they didn't know what to do with you, so they just threw you in some friggin' place and locked you up. But anyway, I was there, and three times in there, I finally found my way. I found my way to Calgary, Alberta, and found sobriety in Calgary. But my defining moment was when I was, I was picked up by some guy, was working for the post office, and I didn't have any food, I didn't have any money, and it turned out to be a $20 trick, right? And I'm sharing this because of powerlessness. And it was a defining moment because I knew at that moment that nothing was working and I was going to die for me, right? So it's those things, hey? It's that step one, right? Admit I'm powerless over my alcoholism. It's that complete powerless that I cannot write the script when I drink, when I use, and I can never tell you that outcome. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know if I was going to make it. And I asked this higher power, can you remove the obsession from me to drink and use one day at a time? Because I don't want to die. And my higher power did. Now, spiritual awakening is different for everyone. I think for me, maybe it's because I was so ready to surrender. It was like, surrender or die. What am I going to do, right? And so this higher power that I choose to call God removed the obsession from me to drink and use one day at a time for all of my recovery. And that's because I do the work every day. It's not like he just, zapped me and I don't have to do anything. It's I thank my higher power every day for keeping me sober and clean and giving me a new life. So I believe that the obsession can be removed through God's grace. That's for me. That's what I believe from the steps. And when my sponsees say to me, well, it doesn't work for me. And I'm like, well, you got to surrender. Well, I'm surrendering. Well, you got to keep going, right? Everybody has a different experience. So I know I'm loved by my higher power. I know that I belong to my higher power. I know that my higher power that I choose to call God had many tears when I was out there, giving my body away and letting people hurt me and me hurting others. I believe today in my heart that that brought much sadness to my higher power, right? So my first 30 days, I don't know if we have any newcomers here, but if you're here, welcome. And this is an important moment for you. My first 30 days of being sober and clean, because for me, I come from another program as well. I didn't think it was possible. I did not think it was possible for an alcoholic to actually do this without lying, right? How long are you sober? 30 days. Like, really? And, really, right? Sober, like complete abstinence from all drugs. Yeah, sober, sober. So when I was in a, when I was in AA and I read Dr. Alcoholic and Addict, there were some people in the rooms that, they're like, oh, Linda, you can just quit drinking alcohol and doesn't tell you anything else. Like you're good to go, right? So I'm reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm like, there's got to be an answer. There's got to be an answer here. Like, I don't believe that. I don't believe that I found my way into Alcoholics Anonymous so I can do other drugs and die. Like, that doesn't sound right to me. And this is just my story, folks. But so, of course, I read the literature, and I found it in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they talk about our right. Our right is over. We have given up our right for chemical use. It's right in there. Okay. And I was so happy because I thought, okay, so it's all good. I'm going to be okay. So I hung out with people that, you know, that worked the steps, did the steps, and lived their life the way I was trying to live mine. And that's just for me. You know, that's just for me. I can't, I'm not here to tell anybody else how to run the program. But for me, my biggest fear was always that I knew if I drink, I'm going to die. So I had to find these solutions, hey? So my step 4 and 5 was an amazing experience. And prior to that, I would sit in a meeting and I could not even look at you. I couldn't even look in your eyes. And I was thinking about that today, and I was sitting here and I was like, wow, kid, you've come a long way, right? Come a long way, right? Long way from looking on the floor because you had so much shame, right? So quickly, so I did 2 years of sobriety and clean time, and I went back to that same sponsor, and I said, I want to go to school, and I'm ready. And she said, all right, okay, you've done your steps, you know, you've done your 12 steps twice, you know, because she did her steps every friggin' year, right? Okay, so, you know, right? I'm like, oh my God, I have to get one of these kind of people. So you know, I did that twice, right? Did all that. Go to her. I want to try to go to school. I believe in my heart that my higher power wants me to carry the message every day, right? I believe that I can do something about this. I want to work with people like me. I want to work with people that, you know, have some of my story that I can be a power of example to. So I went to school, and it was, you know, it was one of the best things that I've ever done, because I didn't have any skills, right? I didn't have any skills because of where I came from. I was a little, you know, wounded girl, and I loved school. Like, I did well, and I think most of the people I know that have come back to school have done really well in sobriety. It's just such a great gift, you know? You got to do the work, but... So I went to school and, got some education, hey? Education. Yeah, that was pretty cool for me. So I was able to, you know, go on and get an undergrad degree in social work, and went on again a bit after that and did a master's in clinical counseling, and, you know, worked in the business a long time, worked a long time in the business. So I think one of the things I want to quickly share about that, though, is I would go to school and, you know, I was like, okay, Linda, what do you need? You know, my sponsor would be like, what do you need? And I'd be like, I just need to be in the same lane as everybody else, right? That's all I want. That's all I've ever wanted, is I just want to be in the same lane as everybody else. I don't want to be in the trauma lane. I don't want to feel less than. I want to feel loved. And the 12 steps have given me that. It's given me the ability to love myself and others. So I've worked in the business a long time, done lots of different things, and I've learned lots of things, but I am here to say on record that Alcoholics Anonymous is Alcoholics Anonymous. It is not a treatment center. Okay? I can go in and I can talk about the fellowship and I can share some of those things, but I've been taught by some of the greatest old-timers that I've been raised with, that the 12-step program is the 12-step program, you know? I mean, it can be a part of it, sure, but I work very hard as a professional clinician to keep it separate, you know? And I've worked with thousands of clients. I've referred them into our rooms, and of course, I talk with them a little bit about their stuff, but then I kind of want them to fly, right? I want them to get into Alcoholics Anonymous on their own or other fellowships, and I want that to become their top priority, you know, because treatment's great, can only last so long, but then you gotta get out there, right? Get out into the community. So for me, that's pretty important, and, you know, I guess I'm sharing that because, as you can see, I take my recovery pretty serious. And I was thinking about happy, joyous, and free, okay? And I was like, okay, so what does that mean for me? You know, it means working the 12 steps. It means, and, you know, maybe because I was a late-stage drunk, I had to do them over and over again, and I still do them over and over again. You know, I have friends in the fellowship who coast on 10, 11, 12, and that's great. But for me, for a long time, I didn't remember some things because I was so drunk, right? So like I didn't remember a lot of stuff. So every time I did my steps, I had something new to add. You know, it's like, oh yeah, right. There's something, you know, and I learned more about myself, right? I've been raised in the rooms that if I want to stay sober, I need to serve. Service is critical for me. And, you know, for me, service was, you know, like just coming in and setting up, you know, the rooms and, you know, just doing what I could do. And then when I had enough courage and I felt a little bit better about myself, I would, you know, I'd chair, you know, I'd do things. I'd, you know, go and serve on many different committees. And I was taught here that if I serve, I'm going to stay sober, right? But if I don't, I'm going to get complacent and I'm not going to make it. So to this day, that's a big thing for me. You know, whether I'm asked to go share 5 hours away from my town where I'm from, Calgary, Alberta, or whether I've been asked to come here, you know, it's all the same to me. You know, it's that I've been asked. And for me, it's not okay to say no, because I have gratitude about my sobriety, right? So service, to me, really it's kept me here in some capacity. And different kinds of service, like, you know, I would try some things. I'd be on some committees and people be fighting with everybody. And, you know, like it was like, oh, my God, this is like hell, right? It's like, what's happening here? And, you know, but then at the end, they'd all like make up and, you know, everybody's hugging each other. And I'm like, okay, it's not quite like the street. Right. Okay. All right. Didn't quite end like that. Okay. You know, so then again, sit down with a sponsor, right? Learn, okay, what kind of service, you know, can I do? And, you know, what kind of things are, you know, where do I fit? Because I don't want to say no. So again, it's about, I got to be myself, right? So I want to talk a little bit about my relationship with God this evening. I think it's really important. When I think about happy, joyous, and free, I think about God's grace. And for me, it's, I heard some speaker tapes one time, and they talked about, you know, step 6 and 7 and, you know, that, you know, shortcomings and, you know, kind of defects of character. And I was like, oh my God, this is really hard stuff. How do you figure all this out? And, but what I've learned from being on the bench with my higher power for over 30 years, I've learned something that I want to share because I think it's really important. I've learned to wait. Okay? I've learned to wait. That when I say to my higher power, show me your will, you know, every day, show me your will, right? And then, you know, I go back in there and I, you know, I work that step 11 and, you know, meditation and prayer. And I'm on the bench with my higher power. And sometimes I have to wait a long time for those answers. And I'm like, what are you doing, right? Like, you know, are you kidding me? You know, dear God, bring me someone to love. Dear Linda, no. All right then. You know? Yeah, no. So I guess my point about that is that spirituality has grown. And, you know, I was taught from doing the steps and from, you know, obviously wonderful members that have gone before me and have taken care of me. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. Like, what is this? Like, you know, but I knew from being out there on that defining moment that I shared with you tonight, I knew that this higher power had something magical. That when I said, God, I don't want to die, that my higher power reached in and did something and took care of me. And that night, I didn't die. So I knew something about that, right? So by the time I get to this higher power and talk about defects of character and shortcomings, I have to say that I think about humility. You know, I really do think about humility. And you know, it's one thing for me to go to God and say, I want this. My higher power is like, well, you're not getting it. You know. So anything I've learned about kindness and love and compassion for self and others, and being successful and loving others, anything has all come from my relationship with my higher power. Okay? None of it came from me. None of it, right? I didn't know how to do those things. I didn't have that skill set because of my illness of alcoholism, and I had to learn everything. And so for me, those steps are there for a reason. They're in order for a reason. And, you know, I'd be in the room sometimes and, you know, I'd say to my sponsor, oh, you know, I met this person. Uh-huh, yeah. Where? Oh, you know, in my home group. Uh-huh, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, no, you know, it's God's will. It's meant to be. Right? My sponsor would be like, it's not God's will. It's Linda's will. Right? And then other times, you know, things would happen in my life, and I knew it was God's will. I knew it was my higher power's will. You know, but because I'm an alcoholic, it's, you know, I can quickly design something in my mind. I can create something. And, you know, I can buy that in about 3.5 minutes, right? I mean, I can create a whole deal about something that, you know, oh, yeah, no, it's supposed to be like this. Okay, so why are you thinking like that? Oh, well, you know, because I was thinking about that. Okay, so did you talk to anybody else about that? Well, no. Right? No, it's just I was thinking about that, and I figured that was like a really good idea. So, you know, one of the first things I learned in the fellowship is, you know, if you're thinking about something, you better check that out with somebody else, hey? Right? Isn't that a fair thought? So, you know, so, I mean, I have absolute gratitude, and, I mean, I have a lovely family. I have two daughters. My youngest is finishing up university, and my eldest is doing quite well. Both of them have always experienced their mother sober. And I have to tell you, I am grateful about that. You know, they grew up in the rooms with me, and, you know, sometimes as a parent, you know, I think, oh, maybe it didn't matter that much. And then every once in a while, my daughters have said things to me like, Mom, you're our warrior. And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, you're our warrior. You have been sober and clean for a long time, and you do your program every day, and you go to meetings, and you help people, and you just keep doing it over and over again. Like, and we are grateful that you are a sober mom. Right? So, I mean, I just have so much gratitude about that, and that is one of my biggest goals, right, is that not only to stay sober for myself through God's grace, but to stay sober for my family and for my friends and, of course, for my clients, you know, that I help and all those things. But it's like sometimes, you know, being in the program a long time, I don't know if you can relate to this, even if you're not in the program a long time, but, you know, you work so hard and, you know, I kind of think, well, I'll just keep doing my stuff. And, you know, family members don't share a lot. And then every once in a while, they'll share a moment in time where it's like, oh, so they actually did notice, you know, that I'm still sober, right? So I've had lots of joy in my life. I've had lots of suffering, and because life is not fair. It's not. Nobody said that it was, but being an alcoholic, when I came here, you know, I thought, oh, you know, it's not my life, it's not fair, it's not fair. And then I've heard people in the room say, life is not fair, Linda, you're going to have to deal with that, right? Well, what do you mean? You do all this work, you know, things should work out. Well, sometimes things don't work out, you know, health and tragedy and loss and job loss and all those things. But it says in the big book, and it says in our literature, that if I do what I'm supposed to do on a daily basis, that I can get through what I need to. That's what I've been promised here, that I can stay sober. You know, if I use those tools every day, that's what I'm promised. I'm not promised a partner. I'm not promised a job. I'm not promised money. I'm not promised any of those things. I am promised as a result of the steps. My obsession to drink and use has been removed one day at a time. That's my promise, right? So I kind of remember those things. And, you know, today in my life, I, you know, I'm the secretary of my group, and I have sponsees to this day, and I love them. And I work with quite a few women from the street who they just find me. I mean, I don't know how they find me, but God brings them to me. And I have two favorite sponsees that when they came in to our group, nobody wanted to sponsor them because they were from the street. They were street girls, right? They're like, well, it's not, you know, we like them. We care about them, Linda. We just don't know what to do with them,
right?
I'm like, fine, I'll take them on. So they've been with me a long time, and yeah, I'm so proud of them. And I have another one who's just celebrated 3 years sober, and she's been off the street for a few years as well. And I love my sponsees. I will be there always, but I always tell them, you know, they're like, Linda, will you sponsor me? And I'm like, uh-huh. I'm like, but you got to work as hard as I do, right? Got to work as hard as I do, and you got to earn your own sobriety. You got to earn your own time, because time counts in recovery. Bottom line, it's got to count. Or what's the point, right? It's got to count. If I'm not going to relapse, my time's got to count if I'm doing the work one day at a time. So I have a lot of. I'm very proud of my sponsees, and I'm proud of the people that I've walked in sobriety with and continue to walk in sobriety. Being an old timer it can be lonely sometimes, and so I have to continue to not be complacent. I have to reach out, and I have to tell the truth about that. You know, I got to reach out, and I've got to say, yeah, you know, it's sometimes it can be lonely as an old timer. And what's really neat about that is that when I reach out, I don't know what this is, but a lot of the time it's the newcomers that come to me and give me a hug and say, we love you, Linda. I'm like, wow, that is so cool, right? All I had to do is reach out. All I had to do is just be myself, hey? You know, and so I getting older in sobriety is, sometimes I wondered, like, where did everybody go? Where's all those old timers? Or where did these people go? And then I came here and I found you. I'm like, okay, they're on the friggin' beach, for Christ's sake. I'm like, what the hell? Now I know where they all went. Okay, I'm coming back next year. Yeah. You know, so I guess I know I'm almost finished, but there's just a couple other things I want to share before I wrap up. So I guess what I'm saying for the newcomers, that welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're here, welcome to this conference. And if you're here, you're meant to hear my story. And if you've been to places where I have been, I ask you to surrender your shame. And I want you to know that I love you. And that if I can do it, you can do it. And it's going to be okay. Right? And for people that are out here with 5 to 10 to 15 years of sobriety, right, I want to say, I know. It can be tough. And I want to thank you for your recovery, because without that, we got nothing, right? And for the people that are 20 plus, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your time. Because old timers, I have some friends at home that don't go to meetings anymore, and they are old timers, and I love them, and I miss them, and I care about them. And I'm like, why aren't you coming to meetings? They're like, well, you know, we got a lot of time now, and you know, we're kind of hearing things over and over again. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, you know, and I'm like, but like, you know, you need to come and be with us. You need to come to meetings. And they're, you know, kind of, you know, whining a little, right? And they're like, well, you know, we got all these new people. Like, it's all good. Everybody's okay. And I'm like, oh, so you think that they don't need you? Oh, well, you know, they kind of need me. I'm like, well, guess what? You need them. Right? you need them. So yeah, we need you, but guess what? You need us, you know? So I'm pretty firm about that, because my friends who stopped going to meetings with time, they didn't make it back, and some of them died, right? They're not doing well, you know? So, I mean, it doesn't matter how much time we have. I believe it's one day at a time, and I belong here. You know, we have a meeting, at home, and it's a meeting where if you have, it's kind of a funny little meeting, actually. You have, you have like some sobriety, you know, you can talk. And so there's like a little group of these people. They got a little bit of time, right? And but then if you're a newcomer, you can't talk until at the end of the meeting, you know, after some of these people talk, right? So every once in a while, I go visit them. Of course, I've got the most time, right? So I'm like, hi, how's it going in here? They're, oh, yeah, uh-huh. They're like, okay, Linda, I guess you're going to go first tonight. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. Why? Well, because you have the most time. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I said, and I said, do you know why I go to my home group? Because the newcomer's there, right? And so I need to carry that message. And so I kind of fight with them a little bit with love. And I go visit them every once in a while just to kind of give them a little bit, just to kick their ass, right? And just to kind of remind them that, you know, they need to come and go to other meetings. So, I guess you can figure by now, I'm pretty serious about my program, and, you know, I do have some opinions. I think, you know, we all have opinions, right? But I guess what's important is that opinions aren't facts, right? They're just opinions. But, but I guess I do believe that, if I'm going to learn how to be myself, you know, I got to keep it real. I got to be honest. And, you know, one of the things I've learned in the rooms is that if I'm in the room and I'm sharing and I'm hurting, I have to tell the truth. I can't sit there and pretend I'm not hurting if I'm hurting. You know, it doesn't matter how long I've been sober, right? I have to cop. I have to tell the truth, or I'm not going to make it, right? And so this honesty piece I've worked on for a long time, and I continue to work on it. And, I think that, you know, I have come a long way because I continue to commit to the program. So when I think about happy, joyous, and free, I just wanted to close with this, but before I do, I just wanted to say that I am absolutely humbled to be part of this experience. I mean, I am humbled, and I have to share a little spiritual moment with you. I was before I heard from the committee, I was doing some meditation and prayer, and I said to my higher power, this is going to bring tears to my eyes, but I said, you know, God, I've been clean and sober a long time. I've done a lot, and, you know, I really miss sharing my story. And, like, within a couple of days, I got an email to come here and share my story. And I thought, okay, so maybe that's how this was supposed to roll out. And I'm just humbled. I'm grateful just to be a small part of this and to be with these other amazing speakers. And I'm so looking forward to hearing their message. So if you're new to AA, you know, like, you're here because you belong here. You know, that's the bottom line. You don't have to tell me that, but I want you to know that I know, right? You don't have to tell anybody that, but I know that if you catch your breath and go inside and ask yourself the question, I think you'll know that you're home, hey? You're home, right? That this is your other family. And, you know, for people who, I mean, I've worked in this business a long time. I'm in another fellowship, and it's all good, but I have, as I shared my story today, I am a drunk. I'm a late stage drunk. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm a drunk, right? And my other fellowship, I have spoken over the years, and, you know, we had a little thing where, you know, people were fighting with AA, and AA was fighting with them, and you know, right? And so I shared, and I read a letter to them from Bill W. one time in my talk, and you know, in it, it's a letter that Bill W. sent to, it was either the head secretary at World Service, you know, in New York or somebody. And Bill W. in this letter talks about the suffering addict, and that he wanted the addicts to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And of course, AA, you know, said, well, you know, if they have a problem with alcohol, they can come to Alcoholics Anonymous, but if not, they have to go somewhere else, right? So I share that today because when I got here, I came here because I have a problem with drinking. But because of my experience with other drugs, I had to share that a little bit because I thought, what if there's one person in this room that needs to hear my story? So maybe they can be referred to another fellowship, right? Maybe that's okay, you know? Maybe that's okay. Maybe I'm meant to say, hey, yeah, well, you know what? I go over here for this, and I come to Alcoholics Anonymous for this, and I have people in the other fellowship, they're like, why do you go to AA? And I always tell them, because I'm a late-stage drunk, and I belong there. So I want to close out with, you know, I wanted to, you know, I prayed about this for a long time and meditated, you know, happy, joyous, and free, right? And so I said to my ex, who's got over 30 years sobriety, he brought me to the airport, and I said, so what do you think about this? Happy, joyous, and free. And he's like, yeah, happy, joyous, and free. Yeah, yeah, no, that's good. Meditate, pray, you know, 24 hours a day. And then he's like, and then you do it all over again, right? You know, so I want to close with this. Today, I am an alcoholic. Tomorrow will be no difference, and my alcoholism lives within me now and forever. I must never forget what I am. Alcohol will surely kill me if I fail to recognize and acknowledge my disease on a daily basis. I am not playing a game in which a loss is a temporary setback. I am dealing with my disease, for which there is no cure, only daily acceptance and vigilance. This is my definition of happiness, joyous, and free. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.